The press box and practices complete eye care in the metro area. From routine eye exams to LASIK and custom cataract surgery, Dr. Jones can get it done for you. He is board certified in ophthalmology and assistant professor at St. Louis University. He sees patients at several locations in the St. Louis area. 1-866-260-EYES, and when you call in, tell him Frank Cusimano sent you.
You already know the Champions Village in Fenton is the state-of-the-art baseball and softball training facility in St. Louis. But did you know the Champions Village is your go-to when your team is rained out and if your player needs to tweak that swing or fix that throwing motion? Also, Champ Summer Camp begins May 20th for the best day camp experience. Champ Summer Camp is 8 to 4 every day and features dodgeball to movies, kickball to talent shows. And don't forget, Naputi Wellness and STL Athletic Development are on site. Check us out at championsvillage.net.
Grab your coat and get your hat. Leave your worries on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street. Can't you hear a pitter-pat? And that happy tune is your step. Life can be so sweet on the sunny side of the street. I used to walk in the shade with those blues on parade. But I'm not afraid. This rover.
And so the fun begins.
Crossed over. If I never have a cent, I'll be rich as Rockefeller. Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of the street.
There was something that I wanted to talk about today, and I can't remember what it was. Something happened the last couple of weeks. It'll come to me later. I went somewhere.
To
the lake? No.
Did you go to Holiday World?
No.
Branson?
No, didn't go to Branson. Mm. Oh, you know what? It was Europe. It was that Europe thing.
That's right. Oh, Europe. Yeah,
that
right.
River cruise to Europe. Good afternoon, everybody. And welcome back. Oh, wait. We were gone. You weren't gone.
Yeah.
You were still here listening to Limey. And whatever he did, I don't know. I didn't hear it. I did get a little feedback from listeners. You want to hear any of that, Limey?
Sure.
I got.
Go for it. I and I go through.
Yeah.
Limey was doing a good job.
Yeah. You. Well, Tim, you think you want to hear it, but here's the bad news. It wasn't,
I'm Limey.
It was, no, I'm talking to.
Oh.
Yeah. Thank you. I was talking to you.
Got it.
Tim indicated, he, you know, he was ready to hear it, hoping it would be bad.
No, that's not true.
Yeah,
that's,
it is.
That's not what I inferred.
Sure it is.
No, it's not.
Here's the bad news. It wasn't bad. It feedback. It was like he did an okay job, and I hated to hear that. That's not what I wanted to hear.
Thank you.
I want to hear you screwed everything up. Although, but I did get, first of all, again, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the 8th day of July, or as I like to call it, just another sleepy, dusty Delta day.
It was a 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty day.
So one of the emails I got, I was going to save this for the Playhouse. Let's just do it now. Dear Frank, I hope you and the guys had a great and safe trip. The guys, of course, would be Tim, Dan, and Bill that went on the trip. I thought I would call to your attention a mistake that Limey made while you're away. Now, let me stop there. Limey, do you have any idea what this is?
Yep.
Okay. For the past 2 weeks, he has been giving out the wrong phone number.
Oh, I heard about
it
this.
It wasn't the full 2 weeks. The first week I was giving out the right phone number. The second week was the wrong one.
What phone number were you giving out?
621, I was saying.
What is 621?
I have no idea.
Is that supposed to be the 821?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. What an idiot.
Yeah, he was wondering, he couldn't figure out why people didn't call.
2 years we've done this.
I know, and I have no idea where 621 came from.
Meanwhile, AM 1590 was getting bombed with calls that week.
Yeah, that's their number, 621. So then it says it wasn't until Scott Sherman told Limey this past Wednesday, July 3rd. Oh, wait a minute. It must have been more than just a week. It was a week and a half. In fact, it was the whole time you were on the air. Because
no, the first
you weren't
week,
even here the 4th.
The first week was fine because I was giving out the number number and people were calling in. Like, we were getting quite a few calls. Monday sucked because we didn't get any calls. And that's when I started saying 621.
It says here for 2 weeks you gave out the wrong number. The number he was giving was not to the station. Limey was shocked and confused. He then ask listeners not to tell Frank because he'd never hear the end of it. Well, that's not like us. We don't just harp on things. And then it says, P.S., that you and Quentin and Scott did a great job while we were away. Was Scott Sherman in here every day?
No, he was here on Wednesday. Wednesday, we brought him in on Wednesday.
What did Quentin do?
He answered the phones. And then he also gave us a little rundown. Turns out he used to be a sports scout for some company in the area. So on
he was a sports scout.
Yeah, I mean, a sports scout for a company, but not for a team.
Oh, sorry, no, not a company, for an agency. You know, an agency that goes out and finds like talent and stuff like that. He used to do it, so he talked about that for a little bit on Monday.
What does that mean, sports scout? An agency that goes out?
Well, he would probably go to high schools and look at high school players.
Go to college, high school,
scout
like that.
You scout a player and give a report back to whomever employs you as to your thoughts on that player's talent.
Is he good at? Does he know that much about?
Yeah,
sports?
He was pretty good at it.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure where to start here. We are back, and I guess we start at the beginning. We left 2 weeks ago. I left actually Monday, and then Tim and Dan and Bill left Wednesday because there were a little over half of us. There were about 70 of us, and a little over half decided to go. We paid, I don't know, $1,600 or $1,700 to do 2 days in Amsterdam. So let's just start with Amsterdam. Now, let me preface this by saying that I had never been to Europe. Tim had never been to Europe. Dan had never been to Europe.
Nope.
We're not part of that crowd.
Bill hasn't either. But
traveled to Europe. No, Bill hadn't either. And I think it's safe to say that we're all really glad we went because now if it comes up, you know, for my whole life when people go, yeah, you know, we were in Europe and you've been there and I have to go, walk of shame. Wah, wah, wah. No, I've never been. I don't have to do that anymore. I'll go, Europe? Yeah, I've been there. So we can do that now. So Amsterdam, let me just say this about Amsterdam. They say that Amsterdam is one of the safest places in the world that you can live. I don't know what that's based on. There's a misconception that the Amsterdam police don't carry guns. That's not true. They do carry guns. One of the biggest categories of crime in Amsterdam seems kind of petty and ridiculous to us, but it's bicycle theft. They have registered, because you register your bike. It's not expensive. They just register their bikes. Because the bikes are such a huge part of traffic in Amsterdam that they want to know who was on what bike in case it runs somebody over, because they will run over you.
They
fly in the city on those bikes. You better watch out because they're headed somewhere and they are not going to weave and bob around you. So I will ask Limey, because he has been to Europe. He lived there for 19 years, but any time in Amsterdam at all?
No time in Amsterdam, no time in Holland. I say
you
want to
take a guess at how many bicycles are registered in Amsterdam?
In Amsterdam?
Just a guess.
I'll say 45,000?
880,000.
Whoa! You were close.
Wow.
Every block.
Wow.
It's just nothing but rows and rows of parked bicycles by the thousands. Okay. So, and they're all chained and locked.
Wow.
And most of them are actually just pretty ugly, plain, simple bicycles, because if you have a really nice, flashy, expensive, but that's the one somebody's going to try to steal. So, Dan, you'd agree, most of the bikes that rode by look like something that we'd have ridden as kids, from Western Auto or something, just plain bicycles. Now, one of the guy who was our sort of tour guide and kind of answered our questions said, I see all these bikes, and they have those chains on. He said, well, the clever criminals in Amsterdam find ways to break those chains. For example, they have come up with a chemical, and they spray it or put it on a chain, and it almost instantly causes the metal to become brittle, so they can just pop the link on the chain.
Wow.
And steal the bike. So you have to find ways, you know.
Like nitroglycerin or something?
I don't know what it is. I do not know what it is, but it makes it so brittle that even steel, it'll just snap. So that's the first thing, and as you notice, is all of these, you know, these bicycles. Now, in Amsterdam, prostitution is legal. And for anybody who tuned in and think, oh, I hope they're not just going to talk about Europe, well, you need to dial away because we have to. Now, Tim, you went to Amsterdam to get on the boat, but you didn't have much time, any time at all to you guys to look down?
Yeah, we did.
I walked through the red light district, and I walked up and down the streets, and I had a good old time.
Yeah,
let's talk about the red light district. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to ask Tim if he partook, because if he did, he wouldn't tell the truth. Neither would Dan, neither would I if we did that. So we'll just say we didn't, and we didn't. But when you go to the red light district where prostitution is legal, imagine walking down a narrow street, and on either side there are essentially like storefronts, they're windows, but they're kind of doors. There's a door, it's glass, and you're standing, honest to goodness, 2 feet, all that's between you and Miss Hot Prostitute, and they were really good looking. They weren't sleazy, sorry, is a piece of glass, a pane of glass, and they're looking at you and you're looking at them, and they might twirl around or bend over or show you their butts, not, you know, with a little string thong bikini on. I got my feelings hurt right away in Amsterdam, and I'll tell you why. 3 times in a row, when I was standing looking at one of these girls, this happened 3 girls in a row, they pulled the drape shut.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm not making this up.
Not
they closed the curtains. Almost as if to say, you're not coming in here.
There is no amount.
There's no amount of money that we would be with you. And that hurt my feelings. And I thought, well, surely they've had worse than me if the guy, you know, pays their price. Now, the other thing that's interesting is marijuana is illegal in Amsterdam, yet it's like the resorts in Jamaica. A pot is illegal in Jamaica, but I can't think of anywhere in the world where there's more pot smoke than Jamaica. It's grown everywhere, it's smoked, but it's illegal. And if you're a tourist in Jamaica and they catch you smoking pot outside the resort, you're in some deep doo-doo that you don't want to be in. In Amsterdam, you don't walk the streets smelling pot everywhere because it's illegal, yet somehow they've decided, well, we'll turn a blind eye and make an exception if you smoke it in what they call the coffee houses. And when you see in Amsterdam a place that says coffee house, that's where the pot is. And you go in and there are people sitting at table just like you'd have coffee, but they're, you know, they're getting
stoned. They're rolling one up, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's interesting to me, too, is that they're called coffee. Not one of them said marijuana house or pot house or pot cafe. It said coffee house. If you want coffee, you go to Starbucks or a cafe. If you want pot, I thought the coffee places should have been called pot house. You go to the pot house for coffee, the coffee house for pot. Mm-hmm. So I asked a local resident in Amsterdam. I said, it wasn't a question. I just said, I'm pleasantly surprised. I thought that when we got here to Amsterdam, everybody would be walking around stoned. Hey, dude. What? He goes, no, that's you people. He said, that's you, the tourists, who get stoned. It's just a common thing for them. And Dan, Tim, correct me if I'm wrong. Did you see a bunch of people walking around high and stoned and, hey, dude, what's happening? No.
Oh, you can't really tell.
Well, you can tell because of the way they drive and walk and talk. They either have built up a great immunity to it, or it's just not a big deal to them, and they leave that up to us because they can drive.
I couldn't tell, but we walked by one of those coffee houses in the red light district, and people were hanging out of the door, and you could just smell.
Yeah, you smell it coming out of the coffee house.
Out of the door.
I had something funny happen to me that I haven't shared to you. In Amsterdam, where I walked into a little pub and I was watching soccer, and it was a tiny little pub, and there was this big bell that was hanging down from the ceiling, and this guy that spoke, and the bartender spoke 6 languages. She was great. Well, this guy decided, I guess he'd had a few beers, and he wanted to ring the bell to see how loud it was. Well, on the sign next to the bell, in a language that apparently he didn't understand,
don't ring the bell.
It said, if you ring this bell, you have to buy a drink for everyone in the bar.
Uh-oh.
And this guy rang the bell, and this bartender went berserk, and she came flying out, and she got in his face. Yeah, yeah. This guy ended up bought me one, bought me a beer, and didn't know me from Adam, and his had to buy a $180 round because he rang that bell.
Whoa. Maybe you need to learn just a few basics in the language.
Yeah.
Read the words, don't ring this bell, or you buy drinks for everybody. Now, one last thing about Amsterdam. If you go to Amsterdam, the number one tourist attraction. And by the way, Amsterdam gets 20 million people a year visiting. Maybe because of the pot, maybe because of the prostitution, maybe just because of the canals and how friendly and clean. And I don't know, there's a lot to like about it, but... What do you think, Limey, the number one attraction is?
The Anne Frank House.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
The Anne Frank House. Now, listen, folks. I have never been anything but straight and honest with you about my lack of education. I do not have a college degree. There's a lot that I should know that I don't know. I don't know a lot of history. I do know who Anne Frank was, and I know just enough that if somebody said, who's Anne Frank, I wouldn't look like a complete idiot. I could say, well, she and her family hid from the Nazis. But I have to tell you, I did not know that was in Amsterdam. I knew that somewhere in Europe they were hidden. And then we get there and I go, wow, oh, that was here. If you go to Amsterdam, I would say more than any other place, you need to go see where she and her family and then another family, eight people, hid for 2 months and 35 days. From the Nazis, okay? When you stand in that room, and let me paint this picture for you. It's upstairs. The door was hidden by a bookcase so people wouldn't suspect that there was anything behind that bookcase. Two families of four lived for 2 months and 35 days in a 500-square-foot space. Do you realize how small that is?
How many people?
Eight people, two families. Wow. Anne Frank, her sister, her parents, and another family. With the help of some people, some wonderful people who I'm sure are in heaven, hiding from the Nazis above a business building that I think had been a home. And I don't know all of the details about that. I just know that downstairs there were people going about their business, working every day. There were some spices and jams made there, and part of it was a warehouse for storage, and part of it was people working. But for 2 years and 35 days, Anne Frank kept a diary about her family, her sister, her parents, and then the other family eventually that moved in. And for two years and 35 days, think about this, in a space the size of an average, fairly maybe a little bigger than average kitchen, these people had to live. They couldn't walk by the window. Because if they had been seen walking by, it would have tipped somebody off. They couldn't make any noise. She never saw the sky. She never felt rain. She never felt what it was like to be outdoors for over 2 years. They couldn't go outside. They couldn't make any noise. Can you imagine this life? They had a toilet and they had a sink. If somebody got a cold, the mom had to suppress and cover the mouths of the kids so nobody would hear them sneeze. At night, when the building was empty, they had to make a point that no one would see light in there. It's the most unbelievable thing. I feel so stupid that I didn't bother as a kid, and even an older kid, high school, whatever, to pay more attention in history. Because there are people that have gone through things that most humans could never make it through. Now, the sad end to the story is that after 2 years and 35 2 years and 35 days, the Nazis did find them. And they don't have any conclusive evidence as to how they found them. There's speculation that somebody tipped the Nazis off and said, hey, there's a couple of families hiding upstairs in that building. They think that's what happened. They don't know if somebody made a noise. They just don't know. But they do know that at gunpoint, the Nazis came in that room upstairs and took those people out of there. And every one of them was either killed in a concentration camp or, as was the case with Anne Frank, she died of typhus. She and her sister died in a concentration camp before they could cremate them alive or put them in the gas chamber. They died of typhus. The only survivor was Anne's dad, Otto Frank. He survived. Some lady, and I her name escapes me, was able to go into that house before the Nazis came back and took everything and found Anne Frank's writings, her diary. This girl for a 14-year-old girl, when you read any of what she wrote like a seasoned 30-year-old journalist. This girl was brilliant. And she said in her writings that it was obviously written in Dutch, by hand, cursive in Dutch, but it has been translated and the book sold in 60 different languages. And in the writing she said, my dream, if I ever get out of here and escape the Nazis, is to someday be a well-known professional journalist. Well, she's dead, and she's, I'm sure, in heaven, and she got her wish. She is a very famous professional, acknowledged, and well-respected journalist. It's an unbelievable story. And, folks, when you stand, I imagine it's kind of like when the World War II veterans go over and stand at Normandy and stand on that beach and realize where they are standing, the exact ground they're standing on, is where so many people were just gunned down before they even had a chance to hit the shore. That's kind of what it's like when you stand in this room. I stood in that room, and the other interesting thing is you go as a group, and they take a few people at a time, because that's a small room, and a few at a time go in. And the early part of the tour, people are kind of whispering and talking, oh, look at this, yeah. But without instruction, when we get in that room, there is absolute dead silence, because you can almost feel the terror, the fear that every hour of every day, if you hear anything outside that bookcase that hides that door, any minute of any day, it could be those Nazi soldiers coming to kill your whole family. What a horrible thing to go through. And that a 14-year-old girl had the presence of mind and the smarts to write the way she wrote. I've never, to this day, that I've seen, read anything written by any teenager that was written like this. So the Diary of Anne Frank has been published, as I said, in 60 different languages. You go to Amsterdam, you might as well go where more people go than any other attraction, and that's the Anne Frank House. They call it the Anne Frank House now. And that was unbelievable. So we got the bicycles, and eventually I will give somebody else time to talk, like Tim and Dan, but if I don't get this stuff while I'm thinking about it out of my head, I'll forget it. We were on a ship called the Amadeus Silver II, and I wish everyone could have gone. I do. And to the people who did go, you are, in my experience, after 20 trips, the finest bunch of people anybody could travel with, people from their 50s to their 70s.
90. And,
I'm sorry?
90.
We had a 90-year-old?
Yes, we did.
I didn't know that.
And he rides a bike every single day.
Maybe that's why he's 90.
Yeah.
Well, the bulk, the great majority of the people were 50s to 70s, okay? And could not have been nicer to travel with. And we're on a ship. We made up half the ship. It was a 160-passenger ship, and half were us. And then the other half were the rudest, most obnoxious, unfriendly jerks I have ever been around, and they were German. Yep. Sorry, if you're listening and you're German, this is not a commentary on all Germans, but it is a commentary on the Germans that were on the boat we were on. What a rude bunch of a-holes these people were.
Yep.
And the cruise director, every speech he made, he had to make it in English, and he was really good. And then the same speech he would make in German. And I'm sorry, but the German language scares me. It's frightening. It's harsh. And when I hear it, I hear, you know, holy cow, Hitler. And I know that's not right, but it sounds that way to me. And these people made it even worse. Almost every one of our listeners commented about, what's the deal with these rude Germans? We would speak to them in the morning. They would not speak back. No. They would push you. They'd move cut in front of you. One of our listeners was watching news on television on the back of the ship, out on the back deck, and a German, was it a woman or man? I don't know.
I think it was a guy.
One of these Germans came over and picked up the remote and just changed it while our listener was watching it. That kind of crap. They would push you aside, get in front of you in the buffet, butt it, cut in line. I don't know what their problem was.
They're still mad about 1945.
Well, an observation I have on that, people that came to my house for a family party I threw Saturday, I have one of my two dogs always opens his mouth when you pet it. And people are kind of like, especially children, are alarmed because they think the teeth are going to come chomping down on it. It's just a reaction he has. You know, the hand comes towards his head, he opens his mouth. But as this is analogous to what you're talking about, German people, many of them, have this look about them that I'll describe as this. If I turned in a paper in college and I thought I did a really good job, I was going to get an A on it, and the instructor handed it back to me, and I look at it and it says D, I go, you know, and the corners of my mouth go down, and my mouth opens up, and my eyes bulge out.
Yeah.
That's their normal look.
Yeah,
and from a prejudicial standpoint, when you're living in the USA, and you see these people walk around with that curled down, open mouth, eyes bulged out look, it looks rude. It looks like they think that you're, you know, beneath them, when really that's just the normal look on their face.
But cutting in front of you or pushing you to the side and not saying good morning back to you, even in German, guten Morgen, they wouldn't even do that.
Yeah.
If you just waved as you're passing them, mm-hmm. they would not wave back. Now, that's not just an expression that they can't help have on their face. Sorry, folks, but after this trip, I have no desire to go to Germany. Those people, that's the way they represented their country and their people to me. No thank you
even
to going to
Germany.
It wasn't
just the people on the boat either. If you walk, I took a couple of just little private walks around Germany. Somebody passed me on the sidewalk, and I'd nod and say hello. And they'd look at me like I was crazy.
Yeah.
Like, do I know you? Well, why are you speaking to me?
Yeah.
You know, it was... It's just that's their culture.
But then you get the Amsterdam people who couldn't have been nicer.
Right.
You get the people in Switzerland who couldn't have been nicer. France couldn't have been nicer. I know. I'm throwing a bunch of countries out there like I'm a world traveler.
It's a bit shocking, though. The people in France were nice. I thought they would have been bad as the Germans.
No, they weren't. Now, again, just so that I don't forget things here as I go along, one of the reasons for all the bicycles in Amsterdam. There are some cars, and here's what's funny, too. The cabs, most of the cabs are Tesla, Mercedes, Audi, Porsche cars running around. But a lot of people ride bicycles because I think a good incentive to would be two things. They get some brakes, some tax brakes, not big, but enough to make it worth looking into riding a bike. Plus, I don't think they go very far. Most of the places they're going to go are within, 2, 3, 4, 5 miles. But get this, gasoline in Amsterdam is $8.50 a gallon.
Oh, yeah.
That's a pretty good incentive to be driving a gas guzzler.
Do they do it by the gallon or
But I had them convert it to gallons because when the guy gave it to me in liters, I said, that doesn't mean squat to me. I don't. And so he said, well, in gallons, and he told me how many liters per gallon, blah, 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 blah. It's about $8.50 a gallon. The other thing I wanted to mention too is, Germany. We did go to Germany. We went to Heidelberg. And Rüdesheim.
And Cologne.
Cologne, yeah.
So here, let me address any of you who may be listening. Not a lot of you, but some of you may be listening who are younger and who buy into this AOC, Cortez, whatever her name is, or Bernie Sanders, or any of these socialist left-wing nut jobs. Any of you who want to buy into them talking about this is how we should live, first of all, I'm going to bet that you've never been out of the country, probably, so you really don't know what you're talking about. So let me give you a little dose of reality. Our German tour guide...
I heard about this. I wasn't...
Me
I
too.
I didn't hear about it, but I spoke to Bill.
My wife just about walked away from me because she thought, well, you are going to jail in Germany. Our German tour guide was nothing more than a propagandist. She should get an award from the German government for propaganda. If she's walking us around Germany, she's spewing out all of this, and we have free, completely free medical and free healthcare, free schooling. You can go. She's going on about go to university, even the best university, no charge. Even people who come from another country. If you're American, you want to go to college, 4 years in Germany or even beyond, get a PhD. Practically no charge, even if you're out of the country. It's like a junior college type tuition, and if you live there, it's free. Free medical, free college. And then she said, and losing a job is almost impossible. If you have a job, you practically cannot be fired. Even if you're sick, you're late, you're sick a lot, you're late a lot, you're kind of a slacker on the job. She didn't say that, but she implied that you can't be fired for those things. It has to be something really, really horrible. And then she told this story. She said a couple of years ago in Germany, and this, she said, was a big story in all the papers and the media and online, there was a woman who worked at a bakery in Germany, and she stole two stolens.
Hello, that's everybody.
What did I miss?
You stole. You were kind of muttering, stuttering. She stole two stolens.
Thank you, Dan.
A stolen is a, yeah.
A stolen is what?
It's a pastry.
It's a pastry
I didn't know that.
Thing.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'll continue now. So they were day-old buns. So they weren't going to be sold, yet she still stole them. She didn't ask if she could. She took them. And her boss fired her for stealing. Check this out. The German government stepped in, took him to court, and made him rehire her and give her her job back. Now, once she told that story, I thought, wait a second. Is that supposed to be a good thing? Because if I'm an employer in Germany, and I can't even fire somebody who steals from me, I don't want to have a business in Germany. So after she goes through all this free this and free that, I knew she was not going to approach this. So I just said, can I ask you a question? She said, sure. I said, how much income tax do you pay? Then she proceeds to tell me that everybody pays 42% income tax. And I said, and that's all? Any other taxes? Which forced her to admit there's an additional 15%, 67% income tax. Now, so I said, well, this stuff's not free. You're paying for all this. Now she's giving me the German look, like at any minute, Herr Hitler, take him away. But she didn't like that. I said, it's not free. Not free. So she just starts to go on and talk again. I wanted to say, because after she's painted this portrait of how great socialist life is, and you don't pay for this, you don't pay for that, what I wanted to say was, well, let me ask you something. If life is so great for everybody, why did this woman need to steal two stale pieces of bread? But I didn't. I held it there and let it go there. I did ask her if she's from Germany. And guess what she said? No, I'm from Atlanta, Georgia. I was born and raised in Atlanta, but she said, I moved to Germany because my husband, who I believe was a professor in Germany, that's where his work was, and I think I should go where my husband goes. And I wanted to go, well, the Me Too movement would never buy into that. You don't have to in the United States go somewhere just because that's where your husband is. What about you? But no, I let it go.
You took the higher road.
Yeah.
Good on you, Frank.
So another reason, I don't particularly ever care to go to Germany again. Now, we also got to go on the Autobahn, and we've all heard about the Autobahn.
Right.
The Autobahn, there is no speed. It's the only place in the world that I know of where there is no speed limit. You can drive 160 miles an hour, and you will not get pulled over.
Wait, what was your top speed?
We were in a bus.
Oh, so man, I'm sorry.
I'm sure our top speed was no more than 60, but here's what's interesting. Only 3% of the accidents in Germany take place on the Autobahn. Only 3%. And you go, well, people are going 150 miles an hour. How come there aren't more wrecks? Well, you can only go that speed when the road opens up where you can go that speed. We were in traffic, so you're not going to go 140 if everybody else is doing 80 or 70. The other interesting thing is that you can still be in a world of trouble if you have an accident on the Autobahn. Think of it as a big interstate where there's no speed limit, yet different sections, different areas of the country, there are posted limits where if you have an accident beyond that speed, let's say it's 100, if you have an accident and you're going over 100, the penalties are much more severe than if you had that accident doing 90 or 80, which I found interesting. The other reason there aren't many accidents is everybody who drives in Germany is practically a professional driver. You don't get a driver's license until you're 18, and nobody gets a driver's license without a certified, approved instruction of 20 hours, 20 certified, stamp signed off hours. You have 20 hours of drive. And if you fail either the written or the driving test, now in this country, if you fail, you can go back the next day. If you fail there, you start the entire 20-hour course over, and you have to do another 20 hours of instructional coursework to take the test again. So I would imagine most people, by the time they get behind the wheel, they're pretty good drivers. They know what they're doing. Hence, only 3% of the accidents take place on the Autobahn. And I'll also say this. When we were in Amsterdam and Germany, Dan, would you agree? I've never seen more traffic in a city in my life. Bumper to bumper traffic everywhere. Yeah. Not crazy. One fender bender, not the sound of crunching anything. These people know how to deal with traffic and how to drive in traffic. I'm almost finished.
Oh, I have something to go back to with with your propaganda lady that was on the tour, that someone was recording a little bit. And when you started talking about the 67% taxes and everything else, there was almost an international incident. And this is what this sounds like.
Oh, boy.
International incident. International incident about to take place.
We have a tourist telling the truth about socialism. We have a tourist telling the truth. Apprehend him immediately.
That reminds me of maybe the funniest slash dumbest thing that occurred every day on the trip, which was every day that the German cruise director would make an announcement.
Oh, he was Austrian.
He was in Germany, Maestro. The Germany cruise director, the Austrian cruise, I'll tell you, I'll take your word. The Austrian cruise director, every time he would make an announcement, he had a little button and he'd go, bong, bong, bong.
Oh, my goodness.
And Dan Strauss just could not help himself.
Tom Brokaw.
Every time, like 15 times there. It's Tom Brokaw, every single night. The German cruise director. And it just never got, if I heard it once, I heard him do it 300 times. Dan just could not help himself every time that sound played.
Dan, can you play us that thing? Ding, ding, ding.
I don't, it also sounded like the Rydell High School when they,
Frank doesn't know that movie.
Do, of course.
Oh, Grease?
Yeah,
Fast Times.
No. Okay. Rydell High School was Greece.
All right.
Greece. Go ahead, play us the thing and show everybody how you did your Tom Brokaw.
Do we have it?
Yeah. You have it.
Oh,
somebody
have it.
Has
I mean,
it.
I got
here,
it.
Here we go.
You ready?
Yeah.
That's Tom Brokaw, everything I knows. Welcome to
Utentag Schlag von die Kugel. Which means, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah. Every time.
To my ship announcement.
Okay, this one time, surely Dan will get tired of it after about 85 times in a row. Nope. Every time.
The only thing, this guy was wonderful. His name was Arno, and he was Austrian. He had a wonderful voice and a wonderful accent. But the only thing he did, honestly, by the time it was the end of the cruise, I thought, I don't ever want to hear that again. Every morning, like we were fifth graders, he sang a song like Mr. Rogers. Remember this? In the morning, you'd hear that, and then he'd go, good morning, good morning, it's time to... I thought, what is this, the Mr. Rogers Neighborhood Show?
Good morning, and you know what? That was, of all the things that occurred, that was, by her own words, Dan Strauss's daughter, favorite part of the cruise.
Well, she's a singer. She loved that.
That was her favorite part. In fact, I even walked up to the guy and I asked him, will you record that in my phone? I want to send that to Dan's daughter so that can be her alarm clock wake-up tone. And he said he would do it, but then they sang together and I think she recorded that.
Yeah, you let us sing it.
Yeah. That was her favorite part.
We sang with him.
Do you have does she have a copy of her singing with him?
Yeah. Hold on here. Let me find it.
Oh,
I
have
to find it. I have it on...
That's so funny that
it's on my phone.
That it annoyed you and it was her favorite part. That just shows you how everybody's different, right?
Good morning. I'll tell you another reason that... Tim, you don't smoke.
I smoke cigars.
Okay, but not cigarettes.
No.
Another reason Dan was in heaven. Those Europeans love to smoke. Limey, do they smoke a lot?
Yes, they do.
Oh, yeah.
Cigarette machines everywhere.
Cigarettes are expensive.
Vending machines everywhere for cigarettes, which you hardly ever see here anymore. Man, do they love to smoke. They sit outside those cafes, and they smoke those cigarettes.
Benson and Hedges was a real popular one in England.
Benson and Hedges?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
They have Ooh, at the, we ended up, the last stop before here was Zurich, the Zurich airport. Mm-hmm. What a fantastic airport. It's the most unbelievable place I ever saw. You talk about state-of-the-art everything, but here's something weird that happened in Zurich. My wife and I, they asked her a bunch of questions, and then they turned to me and said, we're going to separate you from your wife. And they took her away, and they wanted to question me. Now, get this. They fired rapid fire, like 20 questions at me, and what they were trying to do was have me prove that I was actually on a river cruise, that I wasn't just saying that to slip through the cracks. So they'd ask things like, who was the captain of the ship? And if you couldn't say, they'd go, who was the cruise director? They said, give me one meal that you had that you ate over here in Europe that you don't eat at home. Oh, no, I'm not kidding. And then they said, name as many places, countries, and cities that you can that you saw on your cruise. What river did you cruise on? Where did you start? Where did you end? Where do you live? Where did you stay? Unbelievable.
Who asked you this?
One of the security people at the Zurich airport.
Wow.
Now, here's what they were doing, and I know what they were doing. Let's say you said, why were you in this Europe? And you go, well, we're on a river cruise. Well, they're not going to let it go at that. If they said, what cities did you visit? And you made up some cities. They would know. Those aren't on any river cruise route. Right. If they said, what did you eat over here that you don't eat at home? Well, the chances are in 10 days or 2 weeks, you're going to have tried something that you don't eat at home. If they ask you where you had wine, what kind of wine, the towns you, if you screwed enough of that up, they'd haul you off somewhere in a room and really grill you because they'd go, something doesn't add up here. So I got it. But I have to tell you something. It was kind of scary because I thought, are we suspects or something? Right. And then I realized why they did it.
You ever seen a TV show called Locked Up Abroad?
Yes.
Oh. That's what they sort of peppered me with a few questions. That's kind of what I was thinking about when they were asking me those questions.
They did?
Sort of similar.
They never asked me. I never. Wow.
Well, you look like special needs.
Yeah. I have the thing.
I'd love to hear it. I think everybody
I
would.
They both were singing.
I think everybody
All right.
would.
Let's see here. Okay.
Ready?
We heard
that
every single morning.
I'm so sorry.
And that was kind of the whole song. And what it reminded me of, if you go to Disney World, it's a small world.
Yeah.
You hear that about 100 times, you want to kill yourself. It's unbelievable. So they did that every morning, but it was done like we were little children.
And now, he'd say, today we're going to do something. We're going to Cologne.
You will say Cologne. Yeah. Cologne. And then he'd have to do the same speech in German. Schnackenbach, du Gott.
Yeah.
Well, what about food when you were over there? Like, obviously, you said you went out and ate off the boat and stuff like that. So, what were some of the random
well,
weird
when they
things
asked,
that
they
you
said,
ate?
She said, name me one food you ate that you don't eat at home. And I said, Wiener Schnitzel. In Rudesheim. And that was mm-hmm. that was acceptable. That was because mm-hmm. it's true. But you know that what I found out? Wiener Schnitzel, it's really nothing more than fried pork tenderloin. That's kind of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. I had never had had brie cheese in my life until that.
Oh, come
that,
on.
That's
great cheese.
I just never.
I think you'd land a good cheese.
I never.
You know
never
who was in heaven?
Cheese.
That's right, Rat Boy. Yeah. You would have absolutely. Yeah. We went to a cheese farm.
Yeah.
That's one unique thing about the dining experience over there is that you have your salad, and then you have your mm-hmm. soup, and then you have your entree, and then you have your dessert, and after that. After all that,
cheese
that's when they bring out the cheese and crackers.
Cheese.
Yeah. That's right, Rat Boy.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
And we went to this farm, this dairy farm, where they make, we went in this room, just big wheels of cheese. It was a family farm. And the guy, when he walks up to speak to us, here's what his shoes sound like. He had on wooden shoes, like those Dutch shoes. And I said to the guy, I said, man, I bet when you people go dancing, you have to cover your ears. Everybody had wooden shoes on. And man, they made a noise. Yeah, it was really a great trip, and I'm sorry that it's more than likely 99% the last. It's number 20, and it'll be the last one, and I wish more people could have gone. And then later, I want to address one particular couple that was on our trip, and meeting them, you know, you say this in your life because you meet somebody and you go, wow, that just made me rethink my own life and realize how lucky I am. And then 3 days later, we're still complaining about something.
They're in Sicily right now. They stayed. They went to Prague.
Dan, nobody even knows who I'm talking about.
I haven't told the story yet. I know.
So that doesn't mean anything where they are now until you preface it with why they're traveling.
Yeah.
So once again, cart before the horse, Dan Strauss. And then we need to talk about Sandy, your girlfriend. We'll get to that later, too. I have to do some business or we'll be out of business. I have an appointment tomorrow at Ballast Dental Care. One of the things I kept thinking about is, I hope I don't break a chip a tooth or do anything over here, because I do not want to go to the dentist in Europe. I don't want to go to any kind of doctor or anything in Germany, I'll tell you that. And that did not happen. They didn't serve anything that was like rock candy where you break your teeth on it, and there were no incidents, and nobody in our group. The only other wonderful thing, there was not one incident of all the people for 10 days to 2 weeks. Nobody broke an arm or a leg. Nobody had to have medical attention. It was fantastic. There was just nothing but almost the perfect trip. But I'm glad I didn't have to go to the dentist. I don't know what going to the dentist is like in Europe. I know they don't have dentists in Great Britain, from what I can tell. Sorry, just had to. Had to do it.
Gee, that was coming.
But to your credit, and my wife even said, "Boy, that Limey's got a beautiful smile." But you didn't get it till you came back to the good old United States of America and went to Ballast Dental Care.
True.
Ballast Dental Care. I'll be there tomorrow. If you're going to be there, between noon and two, which is when I'll be there, because I have to have a little bit of work done. Please walk in and say hello, even if I'm in the chair and all I can say is, do it anyway. Ballast Dental Care, I've been going there for 40, I have to stop every time, 6 years, 46 years, corner of Ballast and Clayton Roads. I never, ever want to go anywhere else, and neither will you, if you'll just make that first appointment at Ballast Dental Care. BallastDentalCare.com. Do we need to do anything?
Nope, we're good to the top of the hour.
All right, well, then what I'll do is I'll really get caught up and do some Window World after I... Did we leave anything out? Dan, is there anything else real quickly in 1 minute, and then we pick up the rest later, that you can think of? The Rhine River.
The Rhine River
River, we're used to Mississippi, Missouri. I have never seen such a river. You can see the bottom. It's so clear in places. That Rhine River is spectacular and pristine, and every inch of shoreline is maintained. I've never seen anything like it. And we were on it for quite a ways, mile after mile. Not one section of that river looked like, they need to come in here and clean up. No floating debris, no logs. The water was consistently the greenest emerald green. What a beautiful river.
And they're really into water management over there. I mean,
and nobody got seasick because you didn't even know the boat was on water. No. It's like we're in a slow-moving bus. Not once did I even feel like we were on water. And that's important because my wife gets motion sickness. So more as the week goes by. By the way, Wednesday and Thursday, Limey will be in Florida. Woo-hoo! And Bill Clevelin's going to come in and sit with us, and then he'll have time to kind of tell, because he's the observation guy. He's the travel guy who, you know, has learned the art of journalistic travel notes. So he'll share some stuff
and
with you,
And, of course,
too.
Julie. Our travel agent that went.
Well, Dan, of course she went. She was our travel
agent. Well, I know, but she was tremendous on this.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Okay. Thank you for adding that.
Well, he's just been correcting you the whole hour.
No, he's not correcting me. He's interjecting things that I'm getting to later.
That's what I mean.
He does them in bursts so that I don't have time to explain what he's talking about, but that's Dan.
Well, you called him special needs.
Well, he is. Window World, I have time to get this in, then we'll take a break. Someone in our group, we're looking at this cathedral, this beautiful cathedral, and they talked about how some of the windows in the war had to be removed so the Nazis wouldn't steal the stained glass. And there were a couple of windows that, for whatever reason, were in the process of being replaced. And one of our listeners yelled out, "Call Window World!" real loud to the tour guide. Of course, the tour guide didn't know what Window World meant. Window World is not in the stained glass business, but they are in the business of putting in the number one selling replacement window in the United States. And they've been number one for several years, and that's pretty impressive when you consider they've only been around about 15 and a half years. There's nobody that can touch them. Even number two is a distant number two to Window World, and it's because of the price, It's because of the quality, the value, the warranty, the good housekeeping seal of approval, and the fact that they use their own installers. Everything about it. Well, when you know what there is to know, it doesn't surprise you that they're the best-selling replacement window in the country. If you want to know more, go to windowworldstlouis.com. It's 4 o'clock at 590 The Fan.
This is Jim Hayes. You are listening to 590 The Fan, KFNS Wood River, St. Louis, the home of Budweiser.
NBC News Radio. I'm Tom Roberts. Prosecutors want Jeffrey Epstein to remain behind bars until trial after the billionaire was formally charged today with the sex trafficking of underage girls and conspiracy. NBC Investigations reporter Tom Winter.
We're going to wait until at least Thursday, but more realistically Monday, for a federal judge to decide whether or not he's going to get bail on those.